You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
She just did this whole like rant about how gay people are narcissists, and it comes from being like so deeply in love with yourself that you're just looking for your carbon copy.
Oh wow. I wasn't expecting that.
Me neither.
I would say, like, I know now that my mom was wrong because I don't want to date a five.
Oh yeah.
I'm dyking out, you're dyking out. Let's dyke out together, see what it's all about.
Dyking out, dyking out, dyking out, dyking out.
Hi, and welcome to Dyking Out, a podcast that strives to be as contagious as the coronavirus. I'm Carolyn Bergier.
And I'm Melody Kamali.
And today we are dyking out with comedian Rachel McCartney about compulsory heterosexuality. Sounds like a nightmare. Rachel performs all around New York and is killing it on Twitter, and recently taped a comedy set for PBS. Rachel, it's so good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
I was just saying that I don't get to talk to you enough because sometimes comedy, we're just too dykes passing in the night.
Yeah, and I mean, more to the point, you live in Sunnyside and I live in Bushwick.
Yes.
So that'll do it.
That's the main reason nobody wants to come to Queens. And
when I got off the train, I was like, I need to find a wife right now and move here.
Right?
It's so fucking cute.
It is cute. And then there's so many lesbian neighbors that we have that we're friends with. And I mean, not so many, but it's like more than I've
more
ever
than
had.
One couple is so many.
Yes. And then also, like, tomorrow there's an Irish gay pride parade in the neighborhood. And I'm just like,
wow.
This is so gay.
Because it's March?
It's so gay. Usually, isn't it in the St. Patrick's Day parade, they don't want the gay pride people in there? Like, they're known for being, like, a little bit homophobic.
Oh, that sounds right.
So they have the Irish pride here in Sunnyside.
Queens.
Yeah.
I love Queens, though. I had the same reaction when I started coming out here for the podcast. Do you feel like it reminds you more of Chicago than
for sure. Brooklyn, I mean, like, it reminds me a little bit, honestly, of Skokie, if you ever were in Skokie.
I did go to Skokie a lot. I worked in Skokie for a while. You're right.
That was the first place I remember being alive. I was, like, one, and I lived in Evanston, but then from, like, 2 to 6 was Skokie.
Oh.
Skokie sounds like such a Midwestern
it's the
place.
It's
Jewish. It's so Jewish.
Yeah.
So that's where you'd go for bagels.
All right.
I thought you were Evanston full blownsies.
Where were you after? No. Evanston, Skokie, Wilmette.
That's it. Is that where the Home Alone house is? Or is
I think that's Winnetka.
Okay.
I almost went there when I was in Chicago. I was like, should I do the pilgrimage? And then I ran out of time.
No.
Yeah. One day. You know, they announced that Macaulay Culkin was going to be on American Horror Story, and like 5 people sent me the article. And I'm like, great. I'm glad people still associate me very closely with Macaulay Culkin.
I saw that announcement, and a lot of the pictures on the posts were of him and his brother. Like his brother still, I don't know, he can't escape his little brother's shadow now that he's blown up. It's all little baby pictures of them and the announcements for Macaulay Culkin's new role.
Yeah, no, Kieran has really, with the Succession, succeeded his brother
nice.
In being the prime Culkin.
I'm literally hearing about him right now.
Oh, really?
I don't know any of this.
You don't know, like, about the Culkins?
No, I know who Macaulay Culkin was. I know the Home Alone house. I know all that stuff.
Yeah.
But the updates, no.
Okay.
Fuller, what's the bed? Fuller is in the Home Alone movie.
Yeah.
Kieran Culkin, right?
Yeah, that's Kieran Culkin. But then there's also Rory Culkin, who is beautiful and looks like a medieval prince. Like, he, I don't know.
There's a comedian, I don't know who, but he said the Culkins look like if you just tried to draw a person from memory.
I like that.
That's fair.
Yeah.
They also have a sister that looks exactly like them, too.
Ooh.
Yeah. I've met a lot of the Culkins before.
That sounds hot.
Yeah. Right? Because they look like lesbians. And to know that there's a sister that looks just like them is
intriguing.
It's a very
interesting family. It is. A couple quick announcements. Our next show at Stonewall is Monday, March 30th. And on the lineup, we have a couple of past guests, including Taylor Ortega and Sydney Washington. So come out. It's going to be a lot of fun. And we're also putting on a show in Los Angeles at Akbar on Sunday, April 12th. And we'll let you know when tickets are on sale. But we're putting together a lineup right now that's pretty killer. And I'm already very excited about it. And it'll be the first time we put on a show in LA.
Is it? Because I'm new here.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be the best gay bar in Los Angeles.
That's what I hear.
I'm really excited. It's on a Sunday night, so bring your friends and drag them out.
Yeah, yeah. And then a couple quick things. We got some feedback, which you love to give and I love to receive. I do. Feedback on a couple of recent episodes. The doula episode that we just had, we did have a listener, Lauren, who is doing her OBGYN residency. And I did a lot of talking about home births based on what I've seen through one person's Instagram account. So I just want to make it clear that I am no way an expert on home births. And, you know, Solange, of course, like, knows a lot about that. But something important to remember, I mean, one, do your own research. Two, is that the reason why a lot of the statistics for the safety of home births is good is because you only plan a home birth if you're, like, super low risk for doing it. So when we were talking about stats like that, you have to kind of like understand all of the data and see what's really influencing it. So, of course, if you're only having people who are low risk give birth at home, the statistics are going to be different. So
we are no experts.
Yeah. Because sometimes I get real confident with my knowledge that I get from the internet and
from Instagram.
Yeah, from Instagram. And listeners, kindly remind me that some people take me seriously. All right. And another one, we had a listener question a few episodes ago about lesbian bed death, which I still want to do an entire episode on. Another thing that I cited that I read on the internet, and I couldn't tell you where, was that of all like the sex pairings, two females have like the lowest amount of sex. I read that was a study, and I read it was because their libidos are lower, but apparently that is a myth. And that
I'm shocked that that's a myth.
Yeah, same.
Right. I don't know. I mean, you know, I only have my experience as like one woman and can't compare that to like a man's libido, and everybody's different, and like different people I've been with have had different sex drives. And there are just like a lot of different things that determine it. But it sounded really interesting what this listener was talking about. She listened to an episode of Dan Savage's podcast, and it was episode 695 of Savage Lovecast, if anyone wants to listen to it. And there's an expert on who talks about these myths around the libido and about ways to kind of deal with declining libido or declining sex drive or any issues around that in a long-term monogamous relationship. The one thing she mentioned was something about how women require more variety sooner than men. which was interesting.
Yeah, I've heard that all the like, oh, spice it up with this, like these toys and this like lingerie or like this, all of that is for women.
Yeah, that women need that like sooner in a relationship where men don't need that until much later. Like men are fine just doing it missionary while thinking about their coworker for years. That'll get them through. Just kidding.
Until 5 years in, I don't need any toys, and then I'll go find a 19-year-old.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. All right. Well, going back to talking about our Stonewall show, Melanie co-hosted her first Stonewall show.
So much fun.
Yeah. It was a great show.
Yeah.
We had a lot of fun.
Thanks to everyone who came out and watched my initiation. If you weren't there, what happened is I wore a denim jacket when I did the Stonewall show back in July and overheated because it was July, and had to mid-set take off my jacket and try to seamlessly transition back into my jokes. And
while making a tape.
Yeah, while recording. I can't bring myself to watch that tape because I think I kind of bombed. But
you didn't. That's in your head.
Getting a tape is always a nightmare.
It's my Everest, actually, and I'm still working on it. Yeah, we initiated me onto the show because Carolyn famously wears a black leather vest when she hosts every Stonewall show, and we decided that we would fancy a vest out of the denim jacket for me so I don't overheat because, as Carolyn said, armpits are the vaginas of
the upper torso.
Upper torso. It needs to breathe. So we had a audience member who just happened to be a stylist. Her name is Aja, in the front row. And throughout the first couple acts, she designed a vest out of that denim jacket for me.
Because I brought some really sharp fabric cutting scissors and made a lot of really easy scissoring jokes that kept me going throughout the show.
It was the scissoring joke vehicle, jacket.
We thought it was just going to be somebody snipping off the sleeves and 5 minutes later getting it back. But it was literally like at least 45 minutes.
Oh, yeah. We thought we were going to get it back within the host set, but it was...
Come on.
It was like frayed ends, and like it looks like you've had that vest your whole life.
Really, truly.
It was great. It went beyond our expectations. It was such a great night. It was really cool to share it with Melody and like have a co-host on stage with me. And everything was going great until the end of the show. And this is where things get crazy, because one of the audience members who was talking to Melody before, we were out on the street after to get pictures taken, and I see this look on Melody's face of just like pure shock, and somebody from the audience had walked by and grabbed her ass.
It was like
aggressively grabbed her ass
and whispered in my ear. What had happened was right after the show, she came up to me and was kind of aggressively kept saying that I reminded her of a quote hot bitch from the L Word, and she was trying to figure it out. Someone was like, is it Gigi? And I obviously was very flattered. Rachel, I don't know if you're watching Generation Q, the L Word. No, I didn't think so.
Good for you. Thank you.
I admire you for it. But there is a new Persian character on the show, and she's attractive.
That's
and
so fun, though. Is it the one of the same race?
Yeah.
Which one?
I am stumped, you know, so I had to offer my Gigi. She is Persian, and obviously, if you listen to past episodes, I've already talked about her so much. I'm very attracted to this character.
Because she looks just like you.
Because I'm a narcissist.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
But yeah, she aggressively kept calling me Gigi upstairs, and then cut to us taking portraits on the street. I was walking up to Carolyn, and as I'm walking up to her, the same girl comes at me, grabs my ass, and whispers in my ear, bye, Gigi, and then walks away laughing with her friend.
Yeah.
And I laughed because I was in such shock, but if you look at these portraits we took immediately after,
oh my God,
I look terrified and stunned.
That was terrible. That's, you know, never happened at a show before, you know, and for all the people who were like thirsty for Sarah, she had never been groped at a Stonewall show. Yeah. So like to hear of this happening, I was just like, don't act like a creepy fucking dude, you know? Like, and I think it's this thing where, you know, people listen to us and like that person's relationship with you is that you only exist to entertain them. Mm-hmm. So they've like dehumanized you in a way, and you exist for their pleasure the same way
and
that
this is how you were asking for it.
Yeah. By wanting to be an entertainer in the first place.
Yeah.
Too.
And yeah, so like it's the same thing that men do to women in general of like thinking we only exist for their pleasure. And it's very upsetting to see queer women doing that to each other, and it's like performative masculinity at its worst. And please, if you come to Stonewall, we love having you there. Keep your fucking hands to yourself, or I will cut you with my scissors.
We're bringing the scissors to every show now.
Yeah, now I have to bring scissors to every show, and they are very sharp. All right, they cut through denim.
Wait, you're telling
easily.
Me the girl who kept saying "hot ass bitch" was performing masculinity?
That's I think so.
Crazy.
I think so. Yeah.
Can I ask, like, about. How tall was this person?
Shorter than me.
Yes. That was my guess.
Doing it. Yeah, that makes sense. Aggressive
it's,
short
it's
man.
It's definitely
energy.
A type. Yeah. And like aggressive, like they're like yippie dogs.
Yes. Yeah, that makes total sense. I didn't think of that.
They don't think anybody is gonna like perceive them as a real threat, and so no one's taught them how to behave. And like,
yeah. Thank you. Another breakthrough on this one. I couldn't sleep that night. I was in a full blown rage. It obviously triggered something like bigger than that, and I just like did my morning pages the next day. You can't read it, and it's like ripping into the page. My pen. Yeah. Pure rage. Please don't touch me.
Yeah, I've only had men do that to me, and I remember like being in bars and having men just walk by and fucking goose me and being like, "What the hell is wrong with you? Like, what part of me?" Literally just standing here trying to order a drink.
Your ass.
Like, you're right. Yeah. Like, my, just for having an ass.
I got grabbed by the pussy
standing.
Literally by
fuck?
A man.
Yeah.
And this happened before the tape leaked. This was in August before the elections. And when did the tape come out? Like September or October? I just remember it being like
right before.
And I snapped at this man. Like I lose my shit when this happens, and I started screaming. I grabbed his hand. First of all, he was coming up to talk to me, asked if he could buy me a drink, and as he was doing that, he reached up my dress and he grabbed my vagina.
Holy
shit. And so I grip his wrist as he's doing it, and like I pull his hand down so it can let go of me, but I do not let go of his hand as it's in between my legs, just like just squeezing it and screaming in his face. And then I had to leave the bar because I was being like hysterical and loud. And this was in my hometown at Barcelona in West Hartford, Connecticut. Get your shit together. Yeah, I had to leave. I was kicked out of the bar for reacting to a man grabbing my vagina.
And you yelled like, "This man groped me," and they're like, "You don't care."
Yeah,
fuck.
As I was being like escorted out.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I'm going to pitch a show here, and it's like a revenge show, but it's not you seeking revenge. It's your girlfriend, Allie Clayton.
Yeah.
Country style revenge on all the people who fucking assault you.
Carrie Underwood with the baseball bat.
Yeah, pretty much. Just takes them out one by one, and I would watch the shit out of that.
Yeah. Every time I text her about someone being creepy towards me, she sends the same picture, and it's her making a chopping motion with her hand and like very tight lips. And that's her signal for "I'll chop their dick off." And every time she'll see them in person later, if it's like a comic or something, she walks around like that towards them just to like freak them out and keeps walking.
I think people need to be reminded that Allie went to Native American rehab where she spent a lot of time cutting wood.
Yeah.
She knows how to cross cut.
Listen
Native
back to
America,
the
is fun. That where Elizabeth Warren had to go?
She's the founder. She was actually the first Native American at Native American rehab. Another big life-changing event that's happened is Melody and I saw a Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
Yeah.
Rachel, have you seen this?
No, I don't even know what it is.
Rachel, are you into like real slow burn Oscar bait movies?
Honestly, not really. Yeah. But if it involves dykes, tell me more.
Oh,
it's just
it's lesbian yearning. for 2 hours.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yes.
I won't even call it payoff. Yeah, it is.
Well, that's unrealistic.
It is a perfect movie.
It is really good. It's set in pre-French Revolution France.
Yeah, it's like 18th century. It takes place on like an island off the coast of France. And this painter has to go paint the portrait of this mistress who's kind of mysterious. And the portrait is to be sent off to her suitor in Milan.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Her suitor in Milan, who has to like see the portrait to okay that he's going to marry this woman. But she doesn't want to have her portrait taken because she doesn't want to get married. So the mom tells the painter that she has to try to paint her from memory. And
she's her companion.
She, yeah. They tell her she's the companion. So the one character, Heloise, thinks that this woman, Marianne, is there just to be her companion. But really, she's like studying every feature on her face so that she can and like paint her
by candlelight at night.
Yeah,
so she's already, that's already the lesbian yearning. Like, it's practical, like she has to be staring at her face, right, to
yes.
memorize every like curve of her body. So that's, it's already sexy.
There are a lot of reasons why this movie is great. One of them, men are only in it for maybe 1 minute total.
Barely.
Oh my god, that's maybe amazing.
They're rowing her to the island to drop her off in the
yes.
beginning, and that's it.
And then like in the end there's like an art gallery scene, so some men have to be there,
right?
But other than that, the entire movie is all women, and you do not miss the men.
No.
At all. I mean, I don't have to tell you guys this. You don't miss the men. It is fantastic. This movie also has abortion, which is great. It's like very feminist, positive movie, but an interesting thing. So, well, a bunch of interesting things. So the director, Celine Sciamma, she wrote and directed this. And one of the actresses who plays like the young lady who needs to get painted, that's played by Adele Hanel. And they're ex-girlfriends.
Mm.
So casting your ex-girlfriend as the lead in your lesbian movie is the gayest thing I can think of. I didn't even know that going into it. And that just made it way more gay. Also, I've listened to a podcast where Celine was on there talking about the movie and talking about the difference in making a movie from the female gaze standpoint and not the male gaze, and how it's not just about how you shoot nude scenes or whatever. It's like writing from a standpoint of the female gaze, and it's having no power dynamics in it. So where they both have power in it. And she said before, like, they're both tops. Like, they're...
they are.
But it's... Like, I didn't even think about that while watching. But, like, there's no, like... There's just a sense of, like, equality between the two of them. And it's so different than anything, I think, that I've seen before.
Was there even music? I'm just like... Or were we just like...
I'm waiting for the movie, which I think represents more lesbian experience, which is where you're just both bottoms.
Yeah. Is that your life right now? Or like,
if we're talking emotionally, it's like, oh, neither of us have power. We don't know what we're doing.
Oh no, an American will make that.
Yeah, right. The French both have power. I love the movie so much. I'm gonna go see it again with Cecilia because Cecilia was out of town. Allie was out of town.
Yeah.
So we're like, don't be mad at us. We're gonna go see this lesbian movie together for the podcast.
And nice. Allie was mad. She sent me a text. Literally 5 minutes after we bought the movie tickets, yeah. She sent me an article, like an LA Times review of the movie, and went, "You cannot see this with anyone but me." As I was going out the door to see it.
I like, tell her it's for the pod. Tell her it's for the pod. That's okay. Yeah, I don't know, man. And then it was also like so sexy having like a woman painter in it. And maybe I'm like biased because my wife is an artist. But
no, it was sexy.
Yeah. To like watch her painting.
Oh my God. My first girlfriend was an artist. And
yeah.
She wasn't even good at it and it was hot.
Yes.
Did you pretend you liked it?
I did like it. I was that in love.
Oh.
Yeah.
And then after it's kind of like when I first saw pictures of my nephew and I'm like, oh, newborns are all really ugly, but my nephew's so cute. And then years later, I look back at those pictures. I was like, oh, I'm an idiot. Like
yeah.
that. I was like going around showing people being like, no, but this one's different. And he looks like a little gnome.
I do.
He's cute now, but yeah, newborns as a rule. But I do want to talk a little bit about Twitter before we get to our topic, which is compulsory heterosexuality. You're so funny.
Thank you.
You have so many amazing jokes.
Like, that is so kind.
They're so prolific on there, too.
Yes.
I tweet once
I've
a year.
I've never been praised this much for an addiction.
Great. I was saying to Melody, I was like, you know, Rachel's so funny on Twitter and tweets so much that it cannot be good for your mental health.
No, it's not.
I don't tweet much, and it, like, I have to kick myself off of it, or else I can tell that it affects my, like, rage levels, my moods, my,
yeah.
And I have never faced the kind of backlash, like so much backlash that you were talked about on Reddit for things you tweeted.
Yeah, it was nuts.
By the queer community.
Yeah.
Because we love to eat our own.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, and floss with the remains. We're just brutal, brutal. And what's that been like for you?
I mean,
what meds are you on now?
It's very dumb, but it does make me happy that I don't primarily have a queer audience.
Yeah.
Most queer people are great.
Yeah.
But if your audience is like specifically the queer community, just like look at what happened at ContraPoints. ContraPoints is a transgender YouTuber who makes.
Oh, that I didn't realize her name. Is that the beauty? Okay.
No, she would make mostly videos about like culture and like these really great nuanced videos. One of them was about like how being non-binary is valid.
Yeah.
Even though she's like binary trans.
Yeah.
Stuff about masculinity modern day and how like Jordan Peterson and all these people are like pulling vulnerable men into whatever like alt-right bullshit, and here's how society is actually, and she's de-radicalized so many people who otherwise like were falling into alt-right toxic bullshit. She's amazing, like great content, great politics, all of that. But she's made some tweets that people just like totally blew out of proportion, took out of context. They ran her off of Twitter.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just for like jokes? Or
what she said was, even though she understands like the purpose of like sharing pronouns, it is irritating to her when it's like just a group of cis women and they'll start sharing their pronouns. They'll be like she, her, just because she, ContraPoints, is there. Because it feels like they're drawing attention to the fact like, look at what I'm doing because I want to be sensitive to the trans person.
Okay, yeah.
And she was saying that's like irritating to her. It's not like a huge deal or anything, but it's just like kind of irritating.
She's allowed to feel that.
But no, she's not.
But yeah, that's
right.
Because people on Twitter are psychotic. But she was saying this was coming from like the idea that you shouldn't assume anybody's pronouns. But when she's like in the South, in places that are allegedly like more transphobic, people will just automatically say ma'am, and that makes her feel good.
Yeah.
But she said that, and like people were like, you're true scum. Like, you don't believe that non-binary people are valid. You're trash. You're canceled.
Yeah.
They like went through and looked at like all of her colleagues and sent them threatening shit, being like, you need to denounce ContraPoints or it's over for you. Like, it's absolutely nuts. So like, whatever very specific niche you're involved in, and I mean, like, she makes some of the most nuanced content out there. She made a whole video about being canceled. It's a long video, but it's amazing. And she's talking about, okay, yeah, no, this thing I shouldn't have said, but all these other things, it's like you're being ridiculous.
Rachel, what you're saying is, as a podcast, we're setting ourselves up to be canceled.
Of course, yes.
Yeah. All right. Hope people are still listening when this comes
out. I'm bracing myself for it.
Yeah. No, it's a real thing. I mean, I am constantly super hesitant about everything because I'm like, one thing that I say could be taken and a lot of anger aimed at it and like a whole takedown. Like, I've had tiny little tastes of it. And so far, I mean, luckily, thank God, our listeners are pretty awesome. If I say something that is ignorant or something like that, I love being called out for it. But as long as you're like calling me in, as long as you're not like being nasty about being like, hey, you know, I know you're a good person. You probably didn't realize when you said this, you actually did that. And it's like, oh, okay, you gave me something to think about, or, you know, whatever the case. But so many people on, especially on like Twitter or Reddit or like YouTube, are so much less forgiving.
Yeah.
And are so nasty. And it just seems like a lot of like I'm like, why are you so angry? Like, there are people I hate that I never even get that angry at. Like, there are like real awful people who I'll like,
I think,
I don't know.
Do you think they're younger too. I always feel like they're younger because they grew up with the internet and just grew into these like niche little subcultures that anything outside of their bubble really like shakes them, and they're just not used to.
I mean, it's hard to know, right? Because if it's coming on Twitter, you don't really know.
My impression is it is mostly it is younger. Young people.
Yeah, yeah.
But not entirely.
Yeah.
You can be toxic at any age.
Yeah. And so you had a tweet. It was about self-harm.
Yeah.
And like depression as...
Yeah. Yeah, the tweet was, I don't care how much pussy you claim you fisted in college. I will not believe you had a lesbian phase until you roll up your sleeves and show me your self-harm scars.
And yeah, I remember that. I remember liking it. I remember checking back and I remember seeing it had gone viral and the comments. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's very clear what the joke is.
Unless you're stupid.
Yeah.
But if you're stupid, then you're certain you're right about everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're very, very angry.
Or if you're just very serious. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. It showed up on Reddit, but I think the title of the thread was Gatekeeping Being a Lesbian. There's a whole subreddit for gatekeeping.
As if you're like
gatekeeping. Well, it's like, oh wow, these people who have created a community about being excluded have a chip on their shoulder. I can't believe they're unpleasant.
Like, for them to think that you were like legit being literal about any of that and just like, yep, I'm gatekeeping. You have to literally be a cutter to prove that you went through a lesbian phase. Like, that's how you would have to interpret it for it to be like on a gatekeeping thing and not about the emotional turmoil you went through.
Yeah.
You know, coming to terms with your sexuality, which is like what the tweet's
thesis.
About.
For sure. And my favorite part of that Reddit thread, other than the death threats, which were great, the other best part was people were telling me, oh, this sounded like it was going to be a killer joke, and then it wasn't. And then they were trying to punch up the joke, and they're like, the punchline should have been, until you roll up your sleeves and fist me too. I'm like, that's a dog shit joke. Yeah. And it's also gatekeeping.
Yeah.
Because you would be like, that's biphobic.
Yeah.
Because you're expecting someone who says they had a lesbian phase and is bisexual. You're like, the whole thing is I don't have to sleep with you to prove that I'm queer.
Yeah.
You would have been mad at me for that too, and it wouldn't have been worth it because that joke sucks.
Yeah.
It has been done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah. Something that I feel like, you know, within the queer community, and talked about this a while ago, but it seems like people really feel the most comfortable policing lesbians and how we talk. And based on the number of times I've been yelled at for using the term gold star.
Oh,
no one takes that seriously.
Yeah. And they're like, gold star is good. So you're saying that you're better than everyone else. I'm like, yep, that's exactly what I'm saying. Exactly. I actually have gold stars all over.
It's just a dated.
It's just an easy way to communicate something about yourself.
Yeah.
That's it.
It saves time.
It's just like a quick thing. And people will be like, well, like, why is that even important? Because it is important, because I think that, you know, if you've never fucked a man, like, that's saying that, like, there's this whole thing I'm totally naive about. Like, I don't know what it feels like to have a penis go soft inside of me. I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry.
Well, and also, I mean, like, I don't think it makes you more valid as a lesbian.
No,
but
not
at all. I do think that going through your whole life never having sex with a man, if you're a woman, is an extraordinary achievement. That takes consistency. That takes never questioning who you are that hard to do it. There's so much pressure on you to have sex with a man.
Oh, are you,
if you are a woman,
into this topic?
I guess I am.
A lot of resisting of compulsory heterosexuality.
Yeah, totally. That's exactly it. Like, I think it's something that is worth talking about, but I've never used it in a way to be like, oh, I'm better than you because of it. It's not like a bragging thing.
No, but it's like,
and some people might
feel
be,
insecure.
Yeah.
And so they're projecting it onto you.
Yeah.
Because they don't feel that they're queer enough, but that's not your problem.
Yeah.
It's a lot of projection.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like I lost a friend over the summer who recently came out as bi, and I called her a baby gay, right?
Uh-huh.
This is right after the Dyke March. I took her to the Dyke March, and she started crying on the street. I didn't realize I'd hit a nerve.
Because
I said baby gay, and she called it a slur.
What the
fuck? Can I read you? I just pulled it up.
Yes.
She storms off. Leaves me on the street.
Did she just need to get her to her first lesbian breakup immediately?
Yeah, that's what it felt like. It was, and she made sure to be like, make sure you text me when you get home, okay? And I was like, okay. Because
okay.
I knew she wanted to continue this conversation over
yeah.
text because she just felt weird. We ran into my friend from high school who was a lesbian in high school and now a trans man.
Yeah.
And I hadn't seen this person in so long. I was so excited. And the friend that I'm no longer friends with anymore, who stormed off, was really weird leading up to it. Kept saying things like, are you sure you're okay? Do you want me to hold your hand? As we're walking up to this bar to meet up with this person, was like, I'm fine. Are you okay? Like, was just
wow.
like going through the Dyke March. I think this was like the first real dykey day of her life. And so she's like crying at how beautiful it was. And
she really went for
it. Yeah. And yeah. so I go, oh my God, I'm so excited. Like, I was talking to my trans man friend. I'm like, I'm so happy to see you. Holy shit. And I'm here with my baby gay. Like, I was just, you know, like I had a couple drinks and I
yeah.
was just like, oh, I love you guys. And she screams, what the fuck, dude? On the street, and then
she
storms off.
You.
Yeah, right? Triggered. Then I get this text, hey, I hope you got home okay last night. That may have seemed like an innocuous comment, but it was hurtful and it made me angry. I hope we could talk about it sometime, but right now I need to digest this dynamic. It was a special day where I felt sort of big and at home, but your assumptions about me made me feel small and unwelcome. And I go, again, my profuse apologies. I was screaming after her, sorry, on the street. I in no way meant to minimize you or your sense of belonging. I will admit I had a few drinks. I don't remember what prompted that, but I would never intend to hurt you. I use that term playfully with friends and might be used to a certain level of joking or ball busting with comedians. I'm really not sure. If I made you feel that way, I do understand you needing space. She goes, gotta be honest, the quote, I'm used to people with thicker skin is disappointing. I think you have a lot of assumptions about me. Frankly, dude, you don't really know me. You don't know my history. You don't know my struggles, who I've been with, what my shames are. You don't ask me many questions.
She has no shames.
Yeah. You don't ask about my internal world at all. So it didn't feel like a joke as much as a cute way of establishing a power dynamic in front of a group of strangers by quantifying gayness as something to be proven with dues paying and like ... pussy eating punch cards. Like, only after this many pussies can we stop hazing you at literally the most delicate place inside of you. It's a recipe for bad sex, unhealthy relationships, and a shit ton of shame. Maybe your friends love that feeling, but consider that people have different experiences. And then she goes, I accept your apology, of course. I know there was nothing malicious intended, did you? And I'll get over this in no time. But I feel it was important for me to express that because it's a common feeling for a lot of people. You have no, all caps, idea how many shamey lesbian dates I've been on. And I said, to end it, I said I'm not sure to the, like, maybe I was being ball busting comment, because I was drunk and I'm trying to make sense of what happened here. Who are you to infuse all of this meaning into my words or actions? You're right, I don't know you. You clearly don't know me and my experience or humor. I think you're just projecting a lot onto me and I don't know what else to do but apologize again for the comment. I said it wasn't my intent. You replied that it was. Just know that I have regret and guilt for ruining your Saturday. I hope you enjoy the rest of your weekend, because it was Pride weekend. So,
is this exchange like the background on your phone?
Yeah. Now it is. Because, like, I didn't go to the Pride parade that day because I'm very, like, if I know that I've hurt someone, I really internalize it and I feel really bad and ashamed.
Yeah.
And, like, I was supposed to go to the Pride parade and just didn't, because I just, like, sat there examining how I was, like, a terrible person. But then eventually I was like, oh, no, she's wrong, and sent those texts back.
Yeah.
And then she goes, I wish I'd taken a breath before I sent that. It was very hard and I apologize. It's not my intent to make you feel guilty. Yes, it was.
Yeah.
That was your MO.
Man.
For saying baby gay, like, I love you, my baby gay, is what I said.
So many people embrace the term baby gay. I mean, like, half of our listener emails say baby gay. And, you know, if she doesn't like the word baby gay, that's fine. And I also believe that there are a lot of bisexual women or queer women who have felt shamed maybe by lesbians before, right? Mm-hmm. But you can't
attach that to
you can't attach that to other things. Like, if someone's an asshole, that person's an asshole. You can't generalize then that, you know, oh, now I'm using the term baby gay to shame you and stuff. And it's like, oh, we just like to use cute little words like gold star and baby gay.
It's not, yeah.
And
forgive us for having fun.
Yeah.
Maybe the stereotype that lesbians aren't fun is because people try to kill us every time we are.
Yeah. Ding, ding. Like, what are we supposed to replace these terms with? No matter what, it's going to trigger someone and make them feel like not queer enough or something. Like, this is going to continue to happen.
So much of this is like, I don't feel queer enough because you used a word implying that a queer person who isn't me exists.
Right.
Yeah. Like, every time I go on a podcast that, like, talks about dating or whatever, like, the podcast host, who is, like, usually, like, straight,
yeah,
will be like, and you're a, and they'll bring it up, like, a lady who dates ladies. And it's like, lesbian is not a bad word.
Yeah.
The rest of the queer community has tried to make it sound like a bad word, but it isn't. Like, you don't have to tiptoe around it.
Right. Yeah, yeah. You suggested this topic of compulsory heterosexuality, and I had to go to Wikipedia because I was like, is this just heteronormativity? Or no. So I actually wasn't familiar with this as a term. So thank you. You learn something new every episode. So just to ground everybody in it, is the Wikipedia, do you know if the Wikipedia definition
I'm sure it is. You want to?
Okay. It was actually written by Rachel. No. It's the idea that heterosexuality is assumed and enforced by a patriarchal and heteronormative society. In this theory, heterosexuality is seen as able to be adopted by people regardless of their personal sexual orientation. Heterosexuality is viewed as the natural state of both sexes, and deviation is seen as unfavorable.
Yeah.
So why'd you want to talk about this?
I just think it's interesting because we talk a lot reasonably about how, like, sexuality is a spectrum and all that. And
right.
I believe that it is.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of that language, especially when you're young, can be spun in, like, young queer people's minds, young gay people's minds specifically, to be like, oh, it's like I can choose the right thing.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that was the conversation that I had when I came out to my priest, basically.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, we believe that people can be gay, but you don't act on it because that's bad. So, like, yeah, you can have these same-sex feelings, but you don't act on them because you can also just be with a man.
Yeah.
Basically. I mean, more
totally.
Or less, but that's what he was trying to tell me. And, you know, what man would want that?
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
I looked at the Wikipedia too. And I did like how they mentioned how it starts with like, you know, like doctors, like it's huge in medical rooms when they're even like to women, describe your sexual history. When was the last time you were sexually active? They mean when was the last time a penis was in your vagina? When?
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think depending on like what the issue is reasonable.
Right. Of course.
Ask it differently.
Yeah. The theme of my life is finding antidepressants that work, like a combination of meds.
Uh-huh.
And my psychiatrist a few weeks ago, like we kept making changes and we made yet another one. And she's like, that's just like dating, huh? We're going to find you your Prince Charming. Like we're going to find the right man.
Yeah.
Like, come on. That's just the default, I guess.
Yeah. I feel like going back to the when was the last time you had sex thing, I always felt so uncomfortable being like, well, yes, I am sexually active, but only with women, and just like bracing myself for the reactions of like, ugh, having to come out in those ways and feel like you are deviant.
Yeah.
Even like being a proud lesbian, it's like so many things play into it. But at the same time, like heteronormativity is not something that I necessarily get angry about.
Yeah. I mean, like that type of thing, that is irritating.
Yeah.
But if the doctor is not like hostile, I don't care.
Yeah. So like a big thing for me was like anytime, and I used to have a joke about this, but anytime I'd come out to people, like especially in a work setting, and it would always be triggered by them asking, like, do you have a boyfriend? Do you have a husband?
Yeah.
And I would say, oh, I actually have a wife. And they'd always be like, oh, I'm so sorry.
And wives are awful.
Right. But they meant like, sorry for assuming you're straight. And they get like real apologetic. I'm like, that's fine. The joke used to be, I'm sad I had to get rid of this after the divorce, but it was like, they'll ask me what my husband does. And I say, oh, actually it's my wife. She's an engineer. And they say, oh, I'm sorry. I'm like, it's okay. She's not that boring.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah.
A fun little joke that I had to drop. But anyway, like I don't get mad at people for assuming that if I'm married, I'm married to a man, because you like we all grew up on that assumption that that's like the likely scenario.
Yeah. And I mean, statistically it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I can also see why somebody would get mad about it too.
Yeah.
But that is the default. And it feels like it is changing. And I do feel like people aren't assuming it anymore. But like even when I had to go to the sperm bank the other week, and Cecilia and I had to sign off on these forms, and like we had to sign the husband line. They had one for husband. They couldn't just say spouse.
Easy fix.
Husband, sign here. Yeah. I actually pointed out, and she's like, oh, I thought we changed it on all of them. I'm like, nope, not this one.
That's fun, though.
Yeah.
Just to be drafted into, you're the man.
Yeah, yeah.
I used to get mad. You said you didn't get mad. I would just get really frustrated to doctors, even though I'm not like completely Kinsey, what is it, six or seven?
Like six.
Six, I would still bark back at doctors like, well, I'm gay, so what do you need to know?
Yeah.
Like when they ask when's the last time. Yeah. Because I also love uncomfortable situations and like to sit in them, but I would get really frustrated and react that way.
Rachel, did you have times when you were like figuring shit out or when you were younger where you like maybe knew you were queer but were trying not to be?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
In high school, I really wanted that to not be true. A big part of it for me personally was I felt very guilty objectifying women. And I felt like if I could just make myself like men, then I wouldn't ever have to feel guilty about being like a bad feminist.
Huh. That's so interesting.
I'm surprised like that's not more people's experience, because that was kind of the defining thing for me in accepting who I was.
I guess because
I can relate.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true for a lot of people. I guess for me, I always felt like the difference between queer women and straight men is that we don't really objectify women as much. And when we do, it's because we're just like performing masculinity. Maybe that's unfair of me to assume, because I do know, like, I remember I had this boss who was like more on the butch side, and she would just make all these comments about like younger women and being like, oh yeah, I'd like to, and I'm like, ew, why are you talking about her that way? Like, that's not what we do. That's what men do.
Yeah.
Why are we doing that? So I never felt like I was necessarily objectifying women, but there have been times where I will catch myself and then I feel like, ah.
Yeah. Well, I know why. Mine was very conditional that I felt like I was objectifying women, because the way I discovered that I had feelings for women is the person who had lived in the house before us in this basement had left a lot of boxes when I was like in
boxes of lesbians,
boxes of lesbian porn. Great. Or no, just like porn. And so I was like, okay, I like this. But like, I just kind of had a really misogynistic exposure to like my feeling. Hell yeah. So like, I was kind of, I was just always, I felt I was a little creepy kid. Like, yeah. So, and I did have that guilt and shame too, but that's how I started to know that I was attracted to women. So it was, I had to shake a lot of that off.
Same.
Yeah.
Huh. For me, it was, I accidentally found porn.
Yeah.
When I just went on the internet and I was just looking for like, you know, fun articles that an 11-year-old girl would like. And so I typed in girls.com.
Oh my God, now I'm a lesbian. So relatable. Yeah.
Really? And I was always on purpose finding porn. It wasn't
No, I accidentally came up on it. This is dad. I hope my dad never listens to this. My dad obviously did not know when the internet was new how to clear search history.
Oh, God.
And I was just like, okay. Because it's like the internet, this was like AOL dial-up. Like, you could see what had already been seen because of like cookie or like the cache computer. So like, I would be like playing a game. I don't know. I would be able to look at this porn on the internet without being connected to the internet, because they would know if I was on the internet, and I had a certain like times I was allowed to be on it because we'd tie up the phone line. I remember it so well. This like secretary and like garters and like like office like man and secretary.
This, Mr.
like,
Kamali.
Very. I know. It's so gross. And I used to have stand up jokes about it, and then I was just like, I feel weird telling these. I'm not. I retired them. But it was just like the jokes about how like father like daughter when it comes to like porn preferences. But yeah, I came across it accidentally, just being like, what was my dad doing? Oh shit.
I had a joke that was like, I have a hard time looking at porn because the first thing they show you are videos other people are watching. I'm like, what if that other person's my dad?
Yeah.
That's like my first thought, and that's why I can't watch porn.
Yeah, it was super, super porny for me at first.
Yeah. See, that's why, like, I also had, and I know people are going to write in and be like, no, there's like lesbian porn that's like good and made for lesbians.
Yeah, like two videos.
Yeah.
Yeah, I this was 1999, 2000 too.
Yeah, even now that like I can't get into lesbian porn, because for me it just feels like so objectifying that
it just looks fake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like in straight porn, at least there's a woman's body and a person enjoying it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, at least you know for sure
someone's happy to be there.
I was talking about this on another podcast, and then I was like, I can't believe I talked about this, but since it's already out there, I only, if I am going to watch porn, I only watch like hetero or like one man, or no, multiple men sometimes, but which you wouldn't
think
for me.
Like the kids are all right. Remember that scene?
Yeah. No, I don't.
I remember. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think about that a lot, actually.
No, but like a woman, because I know that at least the men are enjoying it. If I feel like nobody's enjoying it, I get like very sad. This is why I can't watch a lot of porn. It makes me very sad.
There's just like nothing there.
Yeah.
It's like, what is exciting about that?
Yeah. Yeah.
And there is like very inclusive porn now, but it's like $50.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I get.
Yeah. I know paying for porn is like the thing you're supposed to do, but I'm not like, I don't consume enough, nor do I want to. I never want to feel like I need to get my $50 worth of porn.
I know. I'm in and out. And
you know, it's like I've got this AMC Stubbs pass, and like every night I'm free, I'm like, all right, what movie am I seeing tonight? Yeah. I don't want to be that way with porn.
Yeah.
That's very real.
Anyway, so you were saying that objectifying women was something that you were afraid of doing. Did like religion or like family beliefs play into it at all?
I grew up in a pretty liberal area. Yeah. And my parents were both Democrats. My mom was very Lutheran. And I remember when I was like 11 or 12, I asked her what she thought about gay people. And she just did this whole like rant about how gay people are narcissists. And it comes from being like so deeply in love with yourself that you're just looking for your carbon copy.
Oh my God.
Wow. I wasn't expecting that.
Me neither.
I thought she was going to be this cool Lutheran mom and just being like, it's okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I used to talk about it on stage actually. Cause she's like, you're just looking for someone who's exactly like yourself because you're just, and you'll never be able to like find real love because you're so in love with yourself. And I would say on stage, and I could not make this work for real audiences, they would get too sad, but yeah. I would say like, I know now that my mom was wrong because I don't want to date a five.
Oh yeah.
Real people hate it.
That's so funny.
That's an interesting
take.
That's
a really funny.
Thank you.
Oh, no, your joke's killer. Your mom's take is new to me.
Oh, I mean, like, it fucked me up.
Yeah.
Like, and so I was like, I can't feel this because I didn't think I was going to hell. I was an atheist. I didn't believe in hell.
Sure.
But I did. I didn't think that being gay was wrong in that it was bad to act on it. I thought it was bad to feel it at all because it reflected on some kind of like core character flaw.
Huh.
Wow.
You know what I thought? And because I like grew up in the Catholic Church, even though I was always like questioning everything they had to say, was that I didn't really believe that any of that they were teaching was real.
Uh-huh.
But I was like, I do believe that if you live your life by these tenets, that you'll have a better life. That this is the key to happiness, is like, don't steal. Don't do these bad things. Like, live in this way. Be charitable, whatever. And that's like that the Bible is just a guide that they figured out of like, this is a way to live a good life. And part of that would be being heterosexual. So it was like, okay, like even though I'm gay, like, and having these feelings, I'm not supposed to because my life is going to be shitty for it.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was more of the thing that I had to overcome with thinking that like heterosexuality led to happy life. But,
totally.
But not enough that I was like, that's fine. I'm willing to be like subpar happy and eating pussy.
Yeah. Just for your punch card, though.
Yeah. Yeah, just for
my
just
God.
To get those punches
pussy
in.
Pussy eating punch card. I was like, you're a poet. Look at that alliteration.
Yes. The alliteration, and also just like, that is the type of phrase that is only turned by people who don't really want to eat pussy.
Absolutely. Just like you don't want to have to buy that coffee for like, your punch card, yeah, you know?
Yes, like you should have to be rewarded for eating pussy.
Yeah.
Like also, the pussy don't itself do it. Isn't the reward.
Don't do it because I know how punch cards work and the reward is just going to be more pussy.
Yeah.
You don't want any of this, honey.
Seriously. That's what we were talking about last time with Solange. We're like, so I feel like in Brooklyn, this is very much a Brooklyn gal who's like, you know, it's like, you don't have to be queer. You know that, right?
Like, yeah. It's one of my favorite tweets of yours, Rachel, is it's something like, yeah, everyone in Brooklyn is queer, but I have to date in New Jersey to get someone to eat my pussy or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
the way you put it was funnier. But,
we were just talking about that. You can say it the real way.
Oh, no, thank was you. I'm glad you like, no, I mean, like, it was slightly different, but I haven't memorized all my tweets.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not a narcissist, Mom. Are you listening from hell?
Oh, my God.
I loved her very much.
That joke is very real.
Yeah, it's so irritating.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is kind of crazy that I wouldn't say we have compulsory queerness now. I don't think anyone is like telling anyone they have to be queer. But I do think it is interesting. Like, there are so many people who think they would be more interesting or they could have some kind of like victim status or something.
Yeah.
If they're queer.
I think that we've swung so far the other way that like being heterosexual is like inherently bad. In our bubbles.
Is it bad though?
Maybe I'm just used to this because I'm surrounded by a lot of like woke young girl comics who are just like, you know, straight white guy is a punchline.
Yeah.
So they're just trying to get away from
but
that.
But doesn't dating them then just make you more of a victim?
Yeah.
Isn't that great? Isn't that what you want?
Oh, I think there's no greater victim than straight women who have no other options.
Yeah. My heart goes out. But I know people are listening in like maybe a rural area. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
It's nuts over here.
Yeah. That's the thing. Nothing is exposing my bubble more than realizing that I must be friends with at least 40% of Elizabeth Warren's base, because based on how many votes she's gotten and how many people I know who like her, I think I know like almost half of the people who support her.
Oh my God.
And then I see the polls. I'm like, well, that's weird, because everybody.
Yeah.
I know. And then also from people I know who are canvassing, especially for Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
And these conversations that I hear, I'm like, ooh, yes, we are, like, because it's inconceivable that somebody in South Carolina is a registered Democrat and does not know that the primary is happening. And then they're like, what are you talking about?
Yeah,
who's running? Like, what?
I did get a very sweet text from my dad, who is only able to like recently vote in elections. It took forever to become a citizen. So he sent a picture with his I voted sticker.
Aww.
And he's in South Carolina and voted for Bernie. And
yes!
Was so happy to do it, and was like so excited to see other Democrats doing it too. Just Democrats in general. Like, he thought he'd be the only one, and he was like nervous to go.
Oh, that's beautiful.
That's cute. Love it. Yeah.
I'm in such a different bubble from you.
Yeah.
Because everyone I'm friends with supports Bernie.
Well, that's because you hang with more male comedians. No, I know. It's not just male comedians.
Yeah, honestly.
But there are a lot of women
toxic
I know who...
misogynist Kate Willett.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah. I was going to say, yeah, because you hang out with her.
Yeah, no.
Because we knew Raghav. We have a lot of staunch Bernie supporter comedian friends.
Yeah, yes. For the listeners, my friend Raghav Mehta died last year, almost exactly a year ago at this point. And so all of his friends just fucking radicalized. And so for the past year, we have been posting constantly.
Yeah.
We drove up to New Hampshire. Some of them are in Massachusetts right now canvassing. And we have, unfortunately, almost no patience for Warren supporters whatsoever. If Raghav were alive, he would just be the one hating the Elizabeth Warren supporters. And we'd all be like, yeah, whatever. But because he is dead, because he didn't have health insurance.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why it's nuts.
Yeah.
And Kate wrote a good article for
Glam. A really great piece. Yeah.
I didn't know it was so a Bernie Borough until I lost one, or a Bernie supporter.
Oh, yeah. Like, I hated Bernie Bros until I loved and lost one.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Check that out.
Yeah, it's a really great moving piece, and I was maybe or maybe not in tears by the end of it, and not expecting it. And how do we get here?
Sorry,
did I make an Elizabeth Warren? Oh, the bubble. We're in a bubble, living in New York, and especially like in entertainment. It almost seems like a bad thing to be heterosexual. And yes, people listening are like, you guys are insane because I'm afraid to walk down the street with a rainbow pin on.
Meanwhile, we're competing with other like queer comics to get on a list of top queer comics. And then we're just like, oh, they're queer. Okay. Like, it's just a nightmare.
Those lists are going to be the end of us. Yeah. We're all going to turn on each other.
So goddamn annoying.
Yep.
I was just thinking about that the other day, like the whole, like, what a weird thing to, you know, most people, it's like they do their jobs and they get like performance reviews by their bosses. And then we're just all waiting for some like writer we never heard of to put us on a list that nobody's reading. And
nobody cares.
Yeah. and that will determine whether or not we have suicidal thoughts that month. Another thing that goes with compulsory heterosexuality is marriage.
Yeah.
So that's part of it.
I'm really glad I skipped that one.
Yeah. You know, I had to think a lot about like marriage and wanting to be married.
Yeah, I was interested on
I'm a pro.
Your take.
No, I mean, I do think that it was interesting to read in this Wikipedia article where I get all my knowledge. You know, how marriage like really exists to like reinforce power dynamics. I mean, everything about heterosexuality and how it became like in the patriarch and how that all became a thing was women would get married so that they could be financially dependent on a man.
Yeah.
And just like produce babies and have kids. And for queer people, you're getting married for different reasons, but also sometimes like the same reasons. And some queer people are like very against marriage because to them they see it as being like this patriarchal, heteronormative.
Getting to visit your partner in the hospital.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, so I did it more for those reasons of getting to visit your partner in the hospital. And
insurance. It's all medical.
Yeah, insurance.
Medicare for all. We will not need gay marriage anymore.
Yes.
This is how we'll sell them to Republicans.
We'll trade it. We'll trade gay marriage.
I would for sure.
Well, I can't because then Cecilia would have to leave the country.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
Oh, that's no good.
Actually, no. Maybe not anymore, but still.
Fair trade, though.
Yeah. I mean, in theory, I would, but don't worry, babe, if you're listening. Can you imagine if I was like, no, I wouldn't trade my marriage for everybody having access to healthcare.
Did you guys experience compulsory? Like, did you feel like it would be better, even though you knew you were into women, like it would be better if you were with a man after the Catholic thing? Like, how long did that last for you?
Oh, not long at all. I mean, like,
that's great.
Once I kissed a woman for the first time, it was so different than any of the experiences I'd had with men, which were like very limited. But yeah. Like, you know, I'd kissed men before, like all strangers, like all, you know, like being out and being like, well, I guess I have to make out with a guy because that's what everyone else is doing, or like they're gonna think I'm gay if I don't do this. But like the first time I had like a crush on a woman was so different than any time I pretended to have a crush on a guy.
Yeah.
The first time I kissed a woman, I was like so turned on and like not repulsed at all, which is like how I felt making out with the guy. So I'm like, oh, okay. Now, like, it was such a radical change in me because I'd always felt so alien from all of my friends who, like, when they were obsessing over men, I just found it so unrelatable.
Yeah.
Not the fact that it was men, but these feelings they were having. I'm like, why are you acting like idiots? You know, or like, what's the big fucking deal? And then I was like, oh, it's just because I can only get that with a woman. I can only feel that. So I knew right away that if I tried being with men, that I would live this like just very limiting experience where I wouldn't feel the range of human emotions, I guess, like good or bad. You know, I would never have like a relationship that I was necessarily that invested in.
I was not that self-aware for a long time.
Yeah.
I was just furious when my friends got boyfriends and just like
it's great.
It was like that Fortune Feimster joke with her mom being like, I don't know why you get so upset when your friends get boyfriends, because she's my best friend. Yeah, that's how I'd react. But I felt like it'd be better. I'm still shaking off the like compulsory heterosexuality just like as of a few years ago, too. Like,
I think a lot of people are, yeah.
I didn't have the religion. My parents were really anti-religion because they had to flee a country where religion was mandatory suddenly. So I didn't have that. I was told not to believe in religion, but I did have the American dream. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, I needed to like procreate and like start a new generation of our family. And I always had that on me. Like I needed to not just do well for myself, but also like continue the bloodline. Like that was always huge.
Are you an only child?
No, I have a younger sister who,
thank God.
She's like fluid too. She doesn't really date. She's like more ace than anything.
I have a dick crazy younger sister. Such a relief.
My sister is, I was like, I know it's up to me because Melissa's never gonna, I don't know if we'll ever have her with a man or a woman or, but yeah, I always knew that I thought I was gay, like very gay as a kid and just buried that. And then did have relationships with women. And then I got like hetero curious. And in Chicago, I started dating a guy.
That was when we were at 100 Proof, right?
Yeah. Do you remember?
I don't remember meeting him.
Okay. But the reason I got so excited too, because I had this like sense of relief and I was like, what if this works out?
Yeah.
And like, I can have a kid someday and my parents will be so excited to have grandchildren. And, you know, he's Middle Eastern. So like, wow. And he gets it. He gets it. And he knew that I was queer too. A lot of his friends are lesbians, but I remember him making a comment too about how he would like changed me or like, and I was like, oh, okay. Like just getting really disgusted with that towards the end of the relationship. And then just like dove into a pool of pussy after that. I haven't looked back since. But yeah, that's, I'm still shaking off that, like, I...
Drowning in punch cards.
So much free pussy for me at that point. Deserved. It was really hard for me to let go of that relationship. It was, like, really toxic. It was really emotionally abusive, and I could not let go of it because I was like, I have one, and I can, like, be regular for my family.
Yeah.
But that's long gone now.
Good.
Because I had to formally come out to my parents, too, like... I'd hint at it a lot of hinting. And because my parents also knew I was gay, like as a kid, but my parents don't have the English to express themselves well normally, and especially to talk about this stuff.
So they were just making like scissoring motions?
Literally my dad was like, are you gay? Like out of nowhere. And be like, no. Like it was just like an accusation.
Yeah.
So I had to, after that relationship ended, just like, ripped the band-aid and called my dad. And he was like, well, you'll find another guy. And I go, or girl. And he goes, oh, okay, fine, whatever makes you happy. And that's how he came out to my dad on the phone.
Yeah.
And then I famously had to come out to them because Allie invited herself over for Thanksgiving. And I was like, shit, and I was like, that's in a couple months. I need to come out to my parents right now. And so it was a huge shock because I was like, she's out. She's got a girlfriend. She's here.
Yeah. guess who's coming to dinner?
Yeah. and she was like nervous about pronouncing their names right. So she was like, I'm just going to call them mom and dad if that's all right because I don't want to mess up their names. Like, so it's just so much so fast, but I'm still, that was just a few years ago, so I'm still shaking that all off.
Did you find yourself like trying to date men then, like, did you feel like you ever got like close, or was it always like, this is awful?
I think we assume, just the way it's talked about, like if you're a lesbian, you're gonna be like repulsed by men, or like especially like if you're a gay man, all the fish jokes, like pussy's disgusting or whatever.
Yeah.
And I didn't really find men repulsive. They were just boring as hell.
Yeah.
So I could make out with a man and I wouldn't be like turned on, but I mean like you feel like it's just nice to be close to a human being. So it's like I was like, you know, I can make this work. Or whatever.
You know, I was watching Desiree Akhavan's Appropriate Behavior.
Oh, yes.
And there's a scene in it where they're like at a bar and her girlfriend, who's like so gay, is just like making out with this guy, this straight guy who's just there with his brother. And she catches them making out. And it was, I think, because she felt like distance from the relationship and that guy was there and like physical contact sometimes feels good. So when Desiree confronts her, it's like, what the fuck? And she's like, I don't know, it was like kissing a baby. And I was like, oh my God, like, I know that's messed up, but that's kind of like how like all the men I've ever made out with. Some felt like if they had like a lot of stubble, that kind of grossed me out. But some of them I'm like, well, this isn't bad. It's definitely not good, but it's just something to do.
Yeah, exactly.
And I would have to get very drunk to do it too. Yeah. That was a whole thing. Like I had to
I've never done it
for
sober.
A year. I've started to realize, like in hindsight, I'm like, I had to get obliterated before those like dates with men when I was trying that out.
Yeah, it was only in college that I've never had like actual like dick in the twat intercourse.
Yeah.
but like I did oral with this guy when I was in college and I had to I had to drink.
Yeah.
That's harder than that would be harder to do than
I assume. I was like, I should have just like had a condom or maybe that would have been easier. But then dad turned this off. but then I like was with a woman recently and she's like, I want to fuck you with a strap on. And I was like, oh, that sounded interesting. And it hurt like a bitch. So I'm really glad I did not have to experience that with a real penis.
Yeah.
Wow. Even past that, though, were there any times like, I don't know what your dating history is like, but like in between relationships where you find yourself single?
It's just so easy because that validation is right there. And if you can make it work, it would like, when I was in college, everyone in my friend group was queer and I'm doing air quotes. Some of them were queer. Some of them just wanted to feel like there was something different about them.
Yeah.
There were a couple of girls who like, had sex the first week, but that was clearly like experimental. Sometimes there would be like a threesome or something. But it was like very like, we're bi. Being bi makes us better than you because you are shallow because your love is about gender, whereas ours is about souls. that kind of bullshit. I graduated college. I went to liberal arts school where supposedly everything was going to be better. I'm in this like queer group of friends where everyone is like idolizing Dan Savage and they know everything about sex and blah, blah, blah. And still the pairings that are considered real and also the ones that are kind of stable and available are opposite sex.
Yeah.
So it's like, if I can't find it here, I probably can't find it anywhere.
Yeah.
And I just need to like, cause I didn't feel like I was necessarily 100% gay.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the first sexual feelings I had, like after I accidentally found that porn, I was in seventh grade and there was this boy in my class who had enormous blue eyes. And that was so hot.
Yeah.
It's like when a guy is just like really attracted to like a woman's feet or something.
Oh. You know?
Like, I don't know that I would have wanted anything to do really with the rest of him, but that turned me on so much. I was like, I'm bi.
Yeah.
But in fact, I am not bi, and there are women who have enormous eyes too. But yeah, no, I just felt like if I can make that work, not only is that going to be easier, but it will mean something about me that I'm not shallow and just want to be with a hot chick. I have a soul and I can really see someone for who they are, and also I can be desired.
Yeah.
Because I didn't think like it's very hard to find a woman on a college campus who like has carnal desire for women. It's always about like proving something.
Yeah. Yeah.
My sophomore year of college, I started dating, and not officially dating, but you know, like a non-relationship relationship, with this girl in my friend group who I thought was so hot, and like I was like in love with her.
Mm-hmm.
Not beforehand, but just like we started sleeping in the same bed, we were making out, we were spending lots of time together, blah blah blah. But she was like, I can't have sex because I have this trauma, and I was just like, I just spent the summer in Plum Village, and I've realized I need to like do this Buddhism thing where I find an inner diamond of happiness, and only like a year from now or something like that am I going to be able to have sex again, because sex is like the junk food of connection, blah blah blah. And I was like, well, there's nothing else around and I'm in love with you, so sure, we'll keep doing that.
Yeah.
And then of course she cheats on me with a man and dates him for the rest of college. And when I'm like in the gym trying to get over this, I dislocate my kneecap. This is like 6 days later, but the rest of college was just like, okay, I lost. And now the rest of it is just everyone's kind of rubbing my face in it because they don't really care what she did, because she takes her top off at parties, whereas I don't, and she's like more fun or whatever. And so it was like this deep, constant alienation and loneliness. And the only escape from that is having someone want you, even if it's a man.
Yeah.
So my junior year, I started like hooking up with this guy who was also in the friend group. We hung out a lot over the summer because we like kind of lived near each other. And it was like, if I could love him, I would be happy.
Yeah.
Like, if I could just make this work, not only, it's not about, like, being able to have kids in a normal life. It's just, it would be an immediate escape from this loneliness where even in a queer circle, it feels like it is impossible to be happy as a lesbian.
Yeah. That's real. Yeah. I don't know. Like, I have friends who definitely like they identify as gay, and then after getting their heart broken by a woman for whatever reason, they'll rebound with a man.
Yeah.
But I always thought that it was more of a thing of like, this won't hurt me emotionally as much, but I'm craving connection because I miss my ex. And then they're using men in that way, and I've never seen it like it's always treating men as a rebound. And I understand why they do that. I've never had that urge, and like,
that's great.
I mean, in past relationships when I thought like things were, you know, on the fritz, I would think like maybe for a second like, would I date men for the free dinners? And then I'm like, nah, not even, I don't know. I'm like, maybe. And then like, as soon as I'm single, like all I want to be with is another woman. Like it doesn't even, I'm not even like tempted to go on a date with a guy. And yeah, that even I remember that happened after I got out of like my first really long-term relationship. That person was like casually dating men, I think, but I think in that case it was trying to make it work and trying to be like, maybe I never gave this heterosexual thing a shot because they had come out so young.
Mm-hmm.
That they were trying to be like, yeah, do like a check. Doing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, oh, I have to. I'm in my mid-20s. Like, I haven't been with a man.
Got to check in with it.
My last shot to try to make like everyone happy.
Yeah.
Also, look at all the real L word cast. I feel like a lot of them are now married and pregnant.
Yeah.
Married to men.
Yeah, I mean,
did you ever watch that? The real?
No,
if you didn't watch.
I saw a couple episodes of the original L Word.
Okay,
so I kind of know.
Okay, pussy eating punch card. We'll give that one half a punch.
Well, I was very proud of myself after my last like big relationship. When I was rebounding from that, I was like, I'm just gonna fuck women.
Yeah,
even if it's really difficult, I'm gonna get on the apps and I'm gonna like hook up with these women that I don't like.
Yeah.
And it wasn't any different from hooking up with men I don't like.
That's what I was gonna say when we were talking about rebounding with men. For me, it's just rebounding with something mindless, and a lot of the time it's easier to just do that with men. Yeah, I just wanted like casual sex and like nothing too like cerebral.
Yeah.
And to me, that's my
Yeah. I mean, it's so hard for me to like, I don't know. How many women are legitimately turned on during like a hookup? Maybe some of them. I'm not saying women aren't horny, but I think there are a lot of women who like it's just the first time you have sex with someone and there's no real connection there.
Yeah.
Me personally, I'm baseline not gonna be experiencing that as like a great sexual experience no matter what.
Yeah, no, that's true. Like the one time that I definitely had like what I consider a classic one night stand. And I remember being like, huh, I felt like I should have enjoyed that more. I was like on the rebound. Also, this person like wasn't my usual type. It was definitely more of like a stud and I'd only been with them.
Yeah.
Women, but she was like super cute and like physically like everything seemed to be doing what it should be doing. But at the same time, I was like, well, I don't have any urge to do that again with that person.
Yeah.
And that was like my first time experiencing that because I'm such like an emotional, like I need emotional connection. Oh, and like,
yeah, that would scare me.
Yeah. Is anybody surprised the person on their second marriage craves emotional connection? So I think we covered a lot of ground there about just feeling pressured.
Just being gay and sad in Wisconsin.
Yeah. But, you know, any imparting advice?
Wikipedia
be
rules.
Be true to yourself. Yeah.
Get on there and check out the compulsory heterosexuality. No, there is an essay, Adrian Rich.
Yeah, that
compulsory
sounds right.
Heterosexuality and the Lesbian Existence, which really kickstarted that conversation. So read that or find its Wikipedia article and let us know your thoughts.
And don't have sex with men if you don't want to.
Yeah. And don't have sex with women if you don't want to.
Yeah.
Don't have sex with anybody if you want to.
Yeah, don't do it for your punch card. Do it for you.
Yeah. Yes. Never feel obligated to get that punch card filled up. Oh, gosh. I hope your ex-friend is listening.
I wonder.
And she's probably burning down everything around her right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's probably...
She can be mad for this, but not for
her fingers,
the inciting incident.
Her fingers are on fire from typing so fast right now.
And definitely not from fingering a woman.
Yo!
Okay. Oh, so many emails coming to us.
Oh, yes.
So many emails. You know, love who you love, people. Love how you want to love. Identify how you want to identify. And moving on. That's my asterisk at the bottom. It's like when you send an email and at the bottom, it's like that legal disclaimer.
Yeah.
Like, just think of that and know that we all mean well and love you. Okay. Listener question. Oh, this one is from a very special listener. It came from Patreon, and you know that puts your question at the top of the list. And this listener came to see me perform in Chicago and drove 4 hours to see me perform.
Oh my God.
And she was so sweet and was so great to meet her. And then I got this listener question. I was like, oh no. So it says, last weekend I drafted an email to you asking you for advice on how to propose to my girlfriend. Then last Tuesday, she dumped me. We had been together for over a year and I obviously thought things were going well. She came over and said that we hadn't spent much time together recently. I asked her how we could fix it. She said, I didn't come here to fix it. I came here to end it. I'm heartbroken.
Is this a reality show?
Right? She scripted that. Now I guess I need some advice on how to get over my first true love. So I will say, having met this listener, she's very young, and this does sound like a true case of the baby gaze of that first love.
Yeah.
That is just the most devastating thing, even though in retrospect, you'll be like, that was not the right relationship for me at all. And it's going to be hard. Like, your first breakup is always going to be devastating. And especially, I mean, my first girlfriend, like my first like long-term one, even though I was like 21, you know, I was thinking like, well, I'm going to have to propose, you know, which now looking back, I'm like, how insane.
That's that line in the listener question too. Like, well, I thought it'd been going well and we've been together over a year, but that's something we all kind of go through with our first lesbian love or love in general.
Like, yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It's been a whole year. And I just think your first breakup is a huge learning lesson and you're just going to be really grateful for it eventually. It just sucks for now. All the songs are going to sound really real. But
well, just like we were saying, I mean, about, you know, seeking affection from other people, it's not going to feel the same. And that can make you, I mean, for some people, you know, who just need the physical affection, like some people say the best way to get over somebody is getting under somebody, right? But yeah. For some people, that will not feel good. And then you'll feel worse because you'll be like, oh, sex with my girlfriend was so beautiful and magical. And
then,
like,
you're crying into someone's mouth eventually and it's not fun. Take the time.
No, yeah, I mean, just feel completely not there.
Yeah.
I think it's fun. Like, in movies, they'll be like, oh, you're having sex with this person and you're calling out your ex's name. And it's like, no, that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
You're just there and you're completely disconnected and they can't really tell. And it makes you feel even more unseen.
Yeah. You know, sometimes it's good to like sit in those emotions and let yourself feel them when you're going through any breakup. I think like sometimes we all feel like we have to pretend we're okay or like get over it really fast. But I think the best way to get over it is to like feel everything as much as possible, like as long as it's safe and you're not like, you know, jumping off a bridge or anything. But like, I don't know. I know for me, like the hardest breakups that I've been through and the ones that I got over, I would say the most successfully were when I let myself like cry until I felt I couldn't breathe anymore and got like everything like out of my system and like went and hung out with friends and talked to friends. Friends are huge.
Yeah. Breakups. And your ex is not one of them.
Yes. 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 Do not even try to be friends. We have a clear stance on this podcast about not being friends with your exes. And yeah, talk to people who aren't your ex. Talk to people who you've known for years that you can go and talk to and get your feelings out. And they can tell you that they never really liked your girlfriend anyway. And all the things that you need to hear. And with time, and not even as much time as you think, you'll feel okay again. And you'll be excited about life and what's coming next. That's my perspective. Anything else?
No, that's great.
That's perfect.
Yay.
Just don't numb it. Feel it.
Yeah.
Move on.
Yep. Exactly. Great. Well, good luck with that. And hope to run into you the next time we're in Chicago.
Yes.
Rachel. Okay. Here's the big reveal. Where can people find you on Twitter?
At Rachel M Comedy.
Okay. And will you tell us if you get any angry DMs from her?
I'm positive I will.
All right. Great, great. And then is that where can they learn about like your upcoming shows, your website?
Yeah, rachelmccartney.net, which I don't update as much as I should, but I'll do that.
Great, great. I know. I find that plugging my website always forces me to update it. So. Melody.
I too have a website. And if I say it, then I will have to run home and update it. So melodykamali.com.
Great. And I'm at cbcomedy.com. So you don't even have to spell my last name. It's great. And then you can keep thinking my name is Caroline, even though every episode I say it's Carolyn. But I see you listeners emailing me spelling it Caroline. And you can always follow us at Dyking Out on all social media platforms. We have pictures of the Stonewall vest, the official hashtag Stonewall vest. We have all sorts of things going on our social media. We had Sir Baby Girl do a cameo singing our theme song. There's great stuff on there. So give us a follow. And also go to patreon.com/dykingout if you want to get extra content. We did record a squirting episode that I have to edit, but that will go up there very soon. And also it really helps because we're trying to get to more cities and travel together. We're going to be in LA, we're going to be in Vegas, and that all costs money. So the more support you give us, the more chances we have to come to a city near you or a country near you, because we are down for it. Just our bank accounts aren't yet.
And you shouldn't have to drive 4 hours.
You shouldn't have to drive 4 hours. We want to come to Indiana. Thank you for diking out with us this week. Dike out with us again next week. Bye.
Goodbye.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And, spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's Hypothetical.